Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Jeff Grammer with the Albuquerque Journal, and this is the Talking Grammar Podcast, episode 83 now. I'm going to give you a little bit of a Mountain West tournament preview. Going to recap just a few of the games from late last week to end the regular season of what was probably, in fact, in a lot of people's estimation, the greatest or one of the very select few greatest seasons of the 25-year history of the Mountain West Conference for men's basketball. And I'm also going to go over the Mountain West Media Awards, which were released today. As I record this, this is on the night of Monday, March 11th. Mountain West Men's Basketball Tournament begins on Wednesday, March 13th in Las Vegas, Nevada, in UNLV's Thomas and Mack Center, as most of you probably know by now. And it runs through Saturday's championship game, which will be broadcast on CBS Sports. First round games on Wednesday are all going to be streamed on themw.com. The quarterfinal and semifinal rounds on Thursday and Friday are going to be broadcast on cbssportsnetwork.com. And we're going to get over, get to the matchups, the times of the games, and a lot more of the tournament stuff a little bit later in this podcast. First, I want to thank you not only for listening and watching on this podcast, but for subscribing and helping out local journalism at abqjournal.com. All the coverage we got going there and here on the podcast, abqjournal.com/subscribe is how you can get there and subscribe to our digital products or our print products if you'd like. I also like to thank TLC Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. They're presenting this episode of the Talking Grammar Podcast. And we got a lot of podcasts rolling out now. We got plenty of them on the Albuquerque Journal Podcast Network. Hope you're watching, giving some of those a chance. You can go to the Albuquerque Journal's YouTube page to watch a bunch of them. We're also pushing them out on social media, stuff like that. But you are here now on the Talking Grammar Podcast. So let's talk a little bit of college basketball, Mountain West basketball, and most specifically for most of you, UNM Lobo basketball. I'm going to go back the final weekend of the Mountain West season last week started on a Friday night with Boise State playing at San Diego State. The reason I want to start there is because it went to overtime. Boise State won, clinched the number 3 seed in the Mountain West tournament, and it featured just an unbelievably crazy shot by Max Rice in overtime that helped Boise State seal the deal and clinch the win, the road win in Viejas Arena against San Diego State. Now, I say it's an unbelievable crazy shot unless you happen to be one of the 15,000 plus fans that was in the pit on January 31st and saw Max Rice go off for 35 points, a career high, and beat the Lobos with awkward shot after unbalanced shot after seemingly impossible miracle circus shot after circus shot, which by now I think a lot of Lobo fans understand. And because he's in his fifth year, I think a lot of people around the Mountain West understand by now that's what Max Rice does. And another guy who understands that is Donovan Dent. And it's something that came up in the press conference earlier today that he and his teammates were watching that game. They were in Logan, Utah at the team hotel on Friday night when that game was being played. And they were watching it. And when they saw that Max Rice shot, Donovan knew what was going, that it was about to go in.
We're watching the Boise San Diego State game. Great game there. I mean, just a lot of fun in this league. Every team's good.
So if you're watching that game, I got to ask about the Max Rice shot in overtime. Morton,
he doesn't put the ball there. Neither does Max Rice, who heaves from that far and gets it. Max Rice, are you kidding me?
What was the reaction of some of the guys watching that, thinking about what he did here?
Me and Brayden, as soon as he shot, I knew it was green. Like, as soon as he left his hand, we knew it was going in for sure.
It was crazy.
I've seen him hit it too many times. Like, at this point, it's kind of a skill for him. I kind of respect it.
It really was, like, when he shot that, like, I was like, yeah,
it's surprising. Did not surprise one at all. They had, like, 3 of those against us, I mean.
All right, so there you go. That was Donovan Dent. His funny response when I asked him, you know, what'd you think about that Max Rice shot? So, obviously, that shot helped them. Some Cam Martin free throws were also pretty big in it, but helped Boise State to a 79-77 win over San Diego State. They were ranked 21 at the time, San Diego State was, and that ended the regular season for the both of them. It got Boise State into the 3-seed spot, clinched before the final 4 games, which were played on Saturday. For San Diego State, though, they had to wait until the next night when the Lobos played number 22 Utah State in Logan, Utah, to see where they would where they'd end up in the tournament bracket, because they could have fallen. The defending champion, San Diego State Aztecs, went all the way to the national title game last year in the NCAA tournament, actually was waiting for the outcome of the UNM Lobo Utah State game to see if they were going to be the 5 seed in the Mountain West tournament this year or the 6 seed, meaning they'd have to play on the first day of the Mountain West tournament. I don't know when the last time they had to do that was, but it hasn't been very often over the past 15, 20 years. And I will tell you this, they are projected still to be a 5 seed probably in the NCAA tournament, and they were about to be a 6 seed in the Mountain West tournament had UNM beat Utah State on Saturday night, which we know did not happen at this point. But the fact that it came down to the final 2 games of the entire season in the conference for a team as good as San Diego State to know that was pretty wild. I will go over the scores real quick. I'm not going to really recap too much of the game action earlier in the day on Saturday, but Colorado State did beat Air Force at Air Force 82-73, and that setup, had they lost, New Mexico would have clinched at least the 6th seed. As it turns out, New Mexico later clinched the 6th seed with some other tiebreakers. Wyoming went to Fresno State, ended probably the last home game of Justin Hudson's career out at Fresno State. We'll see. I don't think anything official has been named or said yet, but Wyoming went out to Fresno State and beat up on the Bulldogs 86-47. And all of that set up, 2 games left in the Mountain West on Saturday night, starting with the New Mexico Lobos at number 22, Utah State. We find out Jamal Mashburn Jr. comes down with the flu Saturday morning. He went to team shoot-around in Logan on Saturday morning, was feeling sick. They sent him back to the hotel, wanted to keep him away from other players. He wasn't feeling any better by game time. First time in 18 Mountain West games that the Lobos changed their starting lineup. Jamal Mashburn Jr. stayed back at the team hotel. They inserted Jamal Baker Jr. into the starting lineup. And while the offense was going just fine for the Lobos, statistically speaking, and I wrote about this in the Emptying the Notebook, statistically speaking, the offense has been very good when Jamal Mashburn Jr. and the starting lineup, the starting 5 players, are playing together. They weren't quite as good at Utah State. Now, that doesn't mean the defense hasn't suffered when the Lobos are starting a 6-foot point guard, a 6-foot-2 two guard, and a 6-foot-2 small forward, essentially, especially when they're playing bigger teams. That 3 spot, when Jamal Mashburn Jr. is 6-foot-2 and having to guard 6-foot-7, you know, Chibuzo Ogbo at Boise State and things like that, that's where the Lobos have really struggled playing these 3 guards, but it's not offensively. They're efficient. They're scoring a lot of points. They've been doing pretty well. Even without Mashburn in the lineup on Saturday night, offense wasn't the issue on Saturday in Utah. Defense might have been a little bit. It was the first time in the entire season the Lobos actually shot better than 50%. They shot 52% in the games. The first time they shot over 50% this season and lost a game. Rather than going over the entire game, the entire stat sheet, what I'm going to do is I'm going to fast forward to the final minute of the game when it was all scored or is all tied up at 82-82. And 45 seconds to go when Utah State's Ian Martinez did this.
It's Martinez, open runway. Oh, a touchdown! And Utah State leads by 2.
All right, well, that makes it 84-82 in favor of Utah State with, like I said, as of 45 seconds to go. Jalen House, who had been taking it from the herd, the student section at Utah State, all game, responds with this ankle-breaking move and this crossover, and then a mid-range jumper, kind of like his friend back at the hotel, Jamal Mashburn Jr. is pretty famous for. But Jalen House answers and ties the game back up at 84 with 36 seconds left on this move.
40 seconds left. House, the jumper. Oh,
so that sets up in the tie game, 84-84. Utah State gets a drop the last play. They want to run the clock as best they can, and they do. And they turn to senior point guard Darius Brown II. And the final moments, Great Osabar actually had the ball in the post. Might have traveled. He did travel. Didn't get called. That's fine. That happens a lot. But after a slight shuffling of the feet in the paint, he kicks it back out to Darius Brown. And Darius Brown hits this NBA range 3 over the outstretched hands of Jalen House, and just a dagger three-pointer that Darius Brown has now done 4, maybe 5 times this year. He is Mr. Clutch in the Mountain West.
It's Brown, Osabor down low, 3 to shoot, Osabor out to Brown, the senior for 3.
And yet, that three-pointer didn't quite end things. Lobos inbound the ball. They had 4.2 seconds left. Inbound the ball, get fouled with 2.8 seconds left. Jalen House does. Utah State up 87-84, up by 3 points. So they foul intentionally. So UNM goes to shoot a free throw. They want to make it. They want to intentionally miss the second, but off the rim. So then they have a chance at getting a rebound, a putback, maybe force overtime. That was the plan. And as you can see here, the first part of that is Jalen House has to hit that first free throw while the herd and 10,270 fans at the D. Glenn Smith Spectrum sold out venue. Just one of the loudest games I've been to this year. They're all chanting, Jalen sucks. Jalen sucks. Calm as can be. Jalen sinks the first free throw. And then the second free throw that he tries to intentionally miss and throw as hard as he can off the front of the rim. Misses the rim entirely. Hits the backboard and comes back. Which should pretty much be a dead ball. The referees are supposed to blow the ball dead right then. And the clock should never have started. If it doesn't hit the rim on a free throw, it's a dead ball. Other team gets to inbounds. Instead, players are standing around. Jalen House, you'll see in this video, even turns around because he knew he didn't hit the rim. Everybody in the arena knew that he didn't hit the rim, except three officials. So they let the clock run out. They let the crowd rush the court. It wasn't the crowd's fault. The clock ran out, and the referee signaled the game was over. So the crowd then rushes the court. Utah State wins 87-85. Outright Mountain West champions. Congratulations to Utah State for doing so. Let's look at that final sequence, though. And as I said, the final sequence there, I did ask, as you're allowed to, at some of these games, you're allowed to ask the lead official for a clarification on a rule or a ruling, or in this case, a lack of a ruling, why they walked off the court while Richard Pitino was sort of looking for him and trying to figure out why did the game end. This is the statement that they put out later that day. Later that night, they put out the statement, and it read from the lead official, head official Mike Littlewood, who said, quote, and this was after the journal, after I asked them for a comment, quote, we did not notice on the court that the ball did not hit the rim, so we let play continue until the game clock expired. So, weird way to end. Probabilities are the Lobos still had very little chance. It would have been 2.8 seconds left with Utah State inbounding the ball with a two-point lead. If the Lobos don't come up with a steal and a quick layup or a quick bucket, they have to foul. Gives Utah State with a two-point lead a chance to go up by three or four. Odds are they're not going to win anyway. Still, you'd rather see a game that good finish without the officials kind of messing up. And they did. They messed up. So I did ask today, we spoke with the UNM earlier today, and I did ask Richard Pitino if he had any communication with the league offices about it, and just sort of what he thought of that final sequence at the Utah State game on Saturday night.
I know the outcome, the probability of the outcome changing is very, very low, but they did blow a call at the end of the game Saturday night. Have you had any contact with
them? Substantially low, Jeff. I don't think they're going to change the outcome of it. They obviously screwed it up. Now, to sit here and say it cost us the game obviously is an exaggeration, because we still would have had to get a steal, score. Like, the probability of all of it turning into a win, I just was very surprised they didn't see it. But they made a mistake. I don't think it's why we lost. It was very confusing. At first, when Howe shot it, I was like, what did he just do? But then I'm sitting there going, well, what if we had rebounded and made the shot? Would they have counted it? And then all of a sudden, it should have been 2 point whatever seconds, and all of a sudden the fans rushed the court. Would that have been a technical? You know, those are things you wonder. But I don't think it cost us the game. We communicated with the conference. I've been coaching for 12 years. I find communicating with conferences to be the biggest waste of time ever, and I think the people at the Big Ten were great, and I think people at the Mountain West are great. Nothing really changes. You know, like, I don't wish ill will on the three refs who screwed it up. I mean, it just, I don't think it's why we lost the game. I'm just very surprised that three guys didn't see it, didn't hit the rim. But none of us were perfect that night.
All right, well, there you go. There's Richard Pitino commenting on the ending of that Utah State game. And believe me, he's well aware that the odds of the Lobos, had they got the call right, the odds of the Lobos winning that game were at that point very slim. He just, kind of like most people, I think, wishes the game wouldn't have ended on a referee error. You want a game that great to end because the players ended the game. So that sets up, obviously, the outright championship for Utah State. Again, congratulations to the Aggies, their first outright Mountain West championship. And in the first year of Danny Sprinkle, head coach, who took over a program that had zero returning points and assists, nothing returning from last year's roster. He did have some players that redshirted and stuff like that, but not 1 point returned from last year's roster. Wins an outright championship in what might have been the greatest year of Mountain West basketball. Congratulations to him. Congratulations to that team. Sets up then a game between UNLV and Nevada, where if Nevada wins, they get to the 2-seed spot. And if UNLV wins, they get to the 2-seed spot. So still a lot to play there. San Diego State at this point had already clinched the 5. New Mexico, by losing to Utah State, had already clinched the 6. So they know they're playing on the Wednesday, the first day of the conference tournament, instead of the quarterfinal round that starts on Thursday. So Nevada ends up beating UNLV, sweeping UNLV this year in their in-state rivalry, 75-65. And Steve Alford had a interesting comment afterwards that kind of just to poke a little bit, poke the bear a little bit with Utah State. The league's unbalanced 18-game schedule, Utah State did not host UNLV this year, and they did not play at Nevada this year. Every team in the league in the 18-game unbalanced schedule misses one road game against one opponent and one home game against one opponent every year, and then they play everybody else twice. Well, the two teams that the league champion missed this year are Nevada and UNLV, who went into Saturday night, the final night of the regular season, as the two hottest teams. One was, I think, riding 10 of 11 games, had won in a row for Nevada, and I believe UNLV had won 11 of 12 going into that game. So, unfortunate that happened. The league is already fixing it. They're going to a 20-game balanced schedule next year. Everybody will play everybody in a true round-robin format, home and away, so this doesn't happen anymore. Doesn't take away the outright championship of Utah State. They deserve it. They were great. They did the schedule they wanted that they had placed in front of them. But for those that follow this podcast and follow Lobo basketball, probably not too surprising that Steve Alford wanted to make sure he was on the record as saying this.
Phenomenal job. And hats off. Congratulations to Utah State for winning the league. We do also know, Utah State, you did not come to Lawler. But congratulations on the league title.
All right, so there you go. There's Steve Alford making sure everybody knew that Utah State, the league champion, did not come to Lawler. Did not visit Reno this year. So that sets up the final standings and then the seedings, which we will get to in just a moment. But the final standings in the Mountain West Conference, you can see on your screen there. I will run through them, especially for you guys listening to this podcast. First place, Utah State, did finish with a 14-4 record, which, again, improbable because they were a preseason number 9 team in the preseason Mountain West poll in the 11-team conference. Nevada and Boise State finished with the same record. They finished in a tie for second place at 13-5. Nevada with tiebreakers is the 2-seed in the Mountain West tournament, and Boise State is the 3-seed. In fourth place was UNLV, finishes at 12-6. And then that 5-seed, fifth place, San Diego State, the defending champs, and again, the national runner-up last year, made that nice run to the Final Four and national title game. They finish as the 5-seed and an 11-7 record. And now we're talking the teams that start on Wednesday, team seed 6 through 11, UNM Lobos and Colorado State finished tied for 6th. The sixth seed goes to UNM and their 10-8 record because of tiebreakers. Colorado State at 10-8 finishes with the seventh seed. That is the your top seven seeds. Those are the seven seeds: Utah State, Nevada, Boise State, UNLV, San Diego State, New Mexico, and Colorado State that most think still have a chance to either win the tournament or and get into the NCAA tournament as well. So that's where we're at. But these other four still obviously want to have a say in that. That's Wyoming at 8-10. They will be playing Fresno State 4-14. That's the 8-9 seeds. And then tied at the bottom, San Jose State 2-16, Air Force 2-16. That's your 10, and that's your 11 seed for those two. So those are the final standings for the Mountain West season. And on Monday, again, as I'm recording this, this is Monday night now, March 11th. Also on Monday, the Mountain West media released its all-conference team, its all-conference awards, its postseason awards and all-conference team. The coaches come out with theirs on Tuesday. They do it through the league. We do it independent of the league. And it's something I've been putting together for about 6 or 7 years now. After the coaches decided to kick the media out of the post-game or the postseason awards, never talked with us about it. They just booted us out 1 year. They asked us to do the preseason one, didn't want us in the postseason one anymore after we started to figure out that sometimes the coaches weren't nominating players for awards. And we could only vote back then on who was nominated or who was on the ballot. And certain teams, we didn't want to, for whatever the reason, whatever agenda coaches sometimes have, some coaches weren't even nominating their own players for awards. And when that started to leak out and reporters started to make comments about that, the coaches got sick of it, decided we don't need the media as part of this anymore. So since they've kicked us out, we've kept it going by doing our own. The official recognized league poll is the coaches poll. And that's fine. I know the Mountain West wants to be one of the power conferences, and especially in basketball, and with the Pac-12 dissolving, you know, it wants to take over the West. A lot of the power conferences let the media be a part of the poll, so maybe the Mountain West will come around to that again. They do not like the appearance of being a small-time league, so we'll see if they keep this up or not. But for now, the media poll that came out on Monday that we released looked like this. All right, so what I'm going to do is I'm just going to run down the all-conference teams, and then I'm going to finish up with the individual awards. And I can already tell you I kind of have an idea of what the coaches' polls are going to look like on Tuesday when it comes out. There are some differences. I think it'll be interesting. I will point out that the media poll, we put all our vote totals out there so you can see it, so everybody can understand exactly why this guy was the last guy on first team and this guy was the last or top guy on second team, how close the voting even was. We do the same for all the individual awards, so there's no hidden agendas, nothing secret about this. Every person from every, there is one vote for every market, all 11 markets, just like the coaches poll has one coach for all 11 teams. The media poll has one market. In markets where there are multiple media representatives that are taking part in this poll, they have to have one combined ballot. Every market gets one vote. And as such, it's kind of hard to have ties between two players in an 11-team league. So it'll be interesting to see if the coaches poll has ties between two players and how they get there with 11 coaches. But we'll see. That'll come Tuesday. For now, this is running down the all-conference teams for the media selections. All-Mountain West first team was Jaden Ledee, Gray Osabar from Utah State, guard Isaiah Stevens from Colorado State, forward Tyson Degenhart from Boise State, and Jared Lucas from Nevada. That's your first team All-Mountain West media selection postseason awards. Your second team, Darius Brown from Utah State, Keenan Blackshear from Nevada, Donovan Dent from New Mexico, JT Toppin from New Mexico, Jalen House from New Mexico, and Dedon Thomas from UNLV. Now, what's interesting there, and you can see, is the point totals show you that Jalen House and Dedon Thomas, DJ Thomas is what he goes by, both had 63 votes. So we did have a six-player second team there. And what's also interesting and very rare in the 25-year history of the Mountain West Conference is that two freshmen, JT Toppin and Dedon Thomas, DJ Thomas, made second team. You don't see freshmen make all-conference at all most years. You definitely don't see two of them on the second team very often. So those two guys are both great. In third team action or in third team selection, Boise State's Omar Stanley, Wyoming guard Sam Griffin, Air Force forward Ritus Petritus, Nick Davidson, forward from Nevada, and Jamal Mashburn Jr. from New Mexico round out your third team. Honorable mentions, a lot of them. We had 26 players in all got votes for the All-Conference Media Team, and you can take a look at them there, or you can go to abqjournal.com/sports and look at our All-Conference team. But now let's take a look at the individual awards and superlatives that both the coaches poll will put out and we and the media put out as well. Player of the Year, Jaden Ledee, San Diego State. He was, in my mind, he did get my vote as well, but the media gave him 7 of the 11 first place votes. And Utah State, Darius Brown second, and Greg Osabar got the other vote. What's interesting here is there are a lot of people in basketball that believe the best player or most important player on the best team always deserves Player of the Year in a league. San Diego State's actually really kind of led the charge on that a lot of years when they've had some great teams that have won championships, but they were so balanced that it was hard to pick out one player or one star. And here we are with Jaden Ledee, San Diego State, easily winning Player of the Year in the media poll in a year that San Diego State is the 5 seed. So I do think it was clear Jaden Ledee, who just couldn't be defended by most teams without just fouling him like crazy. He's an All-American level player. I do think he separated himself enough to earn this award, even if you believe in general that the best player on the best team should win it. In this case, Jaden Ledee was that much better than everybody that I think he deserved it. So, Coach of the Year, this one, the surprise here to me is just that it wasn't unanimous. Danny Sprinkle, Utah State. Steve Alford did a tremendous job at Nevada. What Danny Sprinkle did this year is National Coach of the Year worthy, and he will be getting some consideration for that. So I thought this should have been unanimous Coach of the Year for Danny Sprinkle, but he got 10 of the 11 votes. Defensive Player of the Year, Jalen House gets 4 votes. This one was close, man. Lamont Butler, San Diego State, got 3 votes. I would have been fine with any one of these top 3 guys, actually, I think, really had a good case for this. Trey Coleman being the third from Nevada. JT Toppin, the freshman for the Lobos, and Luis Rodriguez for Nevada, for UNLV, also got a vote each. Very good defensive players. But I think those top 3, Jalen House, Lamont Butler, Trey Coleman, really deserved consideration for the top player, defensive player of the year. And in my mind, Jalen House, what he did earlier in conference play when the Lobos were really hot and had that 5-game win streak, that's when he cemented it to me. Maybe fell off a little bit, but it was a big picture. It wasn't just what he did in the last couple weeks. It was what he did over the 18-game conference season. Newcomer of the Year, Greg Osabar for Utah State. Great season. His teammate, Darius Brown, gets the other 3 votes out of the 11 votes that were cast. Freshman of the Year, JT Toppin does the edge. DJ Thomas for UNLV, from UNLV, 8-3. Sixth Man of the Year, we in the media poll did have a tie. 4 votes apiece for Josh Udeje from Utah State and Mustafa Amzil from New Mexico. With freshman, a very good freshman, by the way, Cam Maniawu, I believe is how he pronounces the last name, for Wyoming, got 3 votes. So really, really good 6 men of the year as well in this league this year. So there you go. There's the media poll results. And again, the coaches poll comes out on Tuesday. We'll see how different it is. I think there's going to be a lot of similarities in the all-conference teams. I think there might be some differences in the individual awards that people will be interested in, is all I'll say there. So that takes us to what we're really here for, right? The Mountain West Conference tournament starts on Wednesday, and this tournament's up for grabs. It's wide open. And when I say wide open, I'm telling you, there are very good probabilities that the people in Vegas who make a lot of money at predicting these things, and sports gamblers who make a lot of money with the math and the numbers and the computers that pump out the probabilities for these things, are showing that this is a very much a wide open Mountain West tournament, with as many as 7 teams having pretty good numbers, pretty good probabilities to win this thing. If you look at the website, this is full credit going to teamrankings.com for pumping out these Mountain West Conference Championship information, odds and probabilities. But anyway, if you look at what they're predicting right now on this chart on your screen there, this is the probabilities to advance to each round. You'll see that five of those teams have 100% probability to advance to the quarterfinals because they all start in the quarterfinals, right? But New Mexico, what's interesting here is New Mexico's the sixth seed, and there's never been a team that played that first day, the outside of the top five seeds that played in that first day, that won this Mountain West tournament in this format. So it is interesting to me that the sixth seed New Mexico has the third highest probability, percent chance to win based on how the bracket lays out and plays out based on their KenPom metrics and all the metrics that go into these things, their offensive and defensive efficiency numbers and all that, also based on who other teams are playing and how hard it is for them to advance on their side of the bracket. So according to TeamRankings.com, the favorite to win the Mountain West tournament is going to be San Diego State at 18.89%. The second favorite is the one seed, the league regular season champion, Utah State, at 16.98%. But then there's number three, New Mexico, 15.24%. And then there's a little bit of a drop to the fourth team. That's Nevada, UNLV, the four seed, playing in their home arena. Not technically their home court because they do bring in a new court for the Mountain West tournament. But in their home arena, UNLV is all the way down there as the fifth predicted in terms of probability, the fifth highest probability of winning this tournament on TeamRankings.com. And then there's Boise State, a team I think at any given point of this regular season anyway, that you might have looked at Boise State and thought they're the best team playing right now. So it's interesting they're the sixth seed or the sixth highest probability to win this thing. Colorado State, again, who entered Mountain West play back in January with the highest ranking in the AP poll, had a good offseason, really, frankly, pedestrian play in conference play. They are the seventh seed, and they are the seventh in terms of probability of winning this thing. Still a pretty good number for a 7 out of 11 team probability to win this thing because there's a huge drop-off after that. Wyoming, Fresno State, San Jose State, Air Force, all four of those teams are under 1% chance of winning the Mountain West tournament, whereas the top seven are between 9% and 19%. So really fascinating numbers, if you ask me. That kind of stuff just sort of fascinates me, and I think it'll be interesting. New Mexico sure could use this 50% number in getting to the semifinals. If they get to the semifinals, they're in the NCAA tournament because they would have had some quality wins to get there. So those are interesting. Let's get rolling now on some game-by-game, brief game-by-game capsules for the first day on Wednesday, and then I'll give you my overall view of maybe some teams I think that could advance or some games I want to watch matchup-wise if they do play out. First game coming up on Wednesday's first round of the men's tournament is the 8-9 game that's between number 8 Wyoming and number 9 seed Fresno State. What's interesting is these two teams knew they were the 8 and the 9. They were the first two teams locked in seed wise about 2 weeks ago now, and it was that way for I want to say a good 10 days or so, where these two teams knew they were going to be playing each other, and they finished the regular season on Saturday against one another. So it was interesting because Wyoming just absolutely blew out Fresno State in Fresno on Saturday, 86-47. When these two teams played earlier in the season in January in Laramie, it was a 68-67 Wyoming win. Fresno State had every opportunity to win that game. Wyoming was fortunate to win on their home court. So very different game. It should be noted, Saturday, we don't know. First of all, Fresno State's very injury hit with the injury bug quite a bit these last few weeks. So I don't know if that was just a team kind of out of gas and out of bodies, or if they just didn't want to show much. Why show everything you can do on Saturday when you know you're going to be playing them in the conference tournament just a few days later? So I wouldn't read too much into the 86-47 blowout of Fresno State. I will note that, first of all, Wyoming, as I just said, 2-0 in the regular season against Fresno State. They're led by two transfer guards, Aquel Cott and Sam Griffin. Sam Griffin, as I mentioned earlier, third team all-conference player this year. Those two guards are both really good. Compared to around the whole league, they give fits to the whole league. They're very good guards. Also, Mason Walters last year, 2023 NAIA Player of the Year. And he's a forward, versatile forward that has been pretty good for them this year. And I really think, frankly, the X factor for Wyoming, if they make any kind of run here, and when they're dangerous, I think it's Brendan Wenzel. Their forward is a really good three-point shooter. And his second half of his season, if you look at his splits between, you know, November and December compared to January and February, the guy's a really good player. Turned it on second half of the season for them. I like Brendan Wenzel a lot, a really good forward who, as I said, can shoot from the outside. As far as, let me add this. They are ranked 15-16 was their overall record this year for the Wyoming Cowboys with head coach Jeff Linder, and they are ranked in KenPom 153 in KenPom for Wyoming. As far as Fresno State goes, they were in the pit just a week ago, senior night for the Lobos. A lot of people watching or listening to this that are Lobo fans may have been there or followed that game, and their best player is Isaiah Hill. He's a guy that got ejected from the Lobo game, didn't play pretty much the second half. It is a team, as I mentioned, just ravaged by injuries lately, especially these past few weeks. And yet, even with all those injuries, they had league champion Utah State beat, basically, at the end of regulation in Fresno 2 weeks ago. And Darius Brown banks in a three-pointer at the buzzer at the end of regulation to tie the game. They were down three with just a few seconds left and about 40 feet out, a lot further than the three-pointer he hit against the Lobos on Saturday night that we saw earlier in this podcast. He banks in the three-pointer in regulation, forces overtime. It was a game where Fresno State's five starters all played 40 or more minutes. That they were down to six scholarship players, I think it was. Isaiah Hill, their best player, fouled out in the overtime period. He played like 44 minutes and then fouled out. But yeah, five starters played 40 or more minutes. Hard to do in a 40-minute game, but when you have the five-minute overtime, that's how that happened. So Fresno State is scrappy. I do think, again, nothing's really been announced, but it looks like the contract that's about to expire of Justin Hutson, the head coach there, is going to expire. If they wanted him back, they certainly could have handled this a lot differently and probably should have, frankly, handled it a lot differently, but they didn't. They didn't extend him. It's impossible to recruit for next year when you don't have a contract through Wednesday at this point for Justin Hutson. So this may be the last go-around for Justin Hutson at Fresno State, and that's unfortunate. It is the business though. And we'll see how they go out swinging for him and for themselves as well. Fresno State is a team that probably needs three-pointers to win. Their offense hasn't been very good this year, especially in league play. They're ranked 11th out of 11 in just about everything when you look at KenPom. They do need some three-pointers to win. The problem is they only shot 33% in league play from beyond the arc. The one exception to that, though, I will say, is Xavier Ducell. Shot 39% from three. He's a very good three-point shooter. Also happens to be a transfer from Wyoming from last year. So I like Isaiah Hill's a good point guard. I think Isaiah Pope, transfer from Utah Tech, formerly Dixie State. He's a pretty good piece of the puzzle for Fresno State as well. I like those guards. Xavier Ducell can get hot from the outside and knock down some shots. And they'll need it if they want to beat Wyoming in this one, in this 8-9 game. The winner of this 8-9 game between Wyoming and Fresno State gets number one seed Utah State at noon Pacific, 1 p.m. Mountain Time on Thursday in the quarterfinal round. And Utah State's 4-0 against these guys. One of the reasons Utah State won the league championship is they didn't slip up against anybody in the bottom of the standings. It's going to be tough, I think, for either one of these teams to beat Utah State. However, I just got done talking about Fresno State found a way to force overtime and really had them beat. So it can happen. It certainly can happen. And we'll see how that goes. First matchup, first game of the Mountain West Tournament is this one, 8-9 game between Wyoming and Fresno State. All right, well, let's move on to game two now on Wednesday in the first round of the Mountain West Tournament. Number 7 seed Colorado State Rams and the number 10 seed San Jose State. This game's going to be played at 1:30 p.m. Pacific there in Las Vegas and 2:30 p.m. Mountain Time. Again, streamed on the Mountain West Network, the MW.com, is how you get all the first day games. What's interesting to me is 10 seed 10 seed San Jose State coach Tim Miles. Sorry about that. Tim Miles is the former Colorado State coach, so obviously there's some familiarity here. And they only played once in the regular season, but it's not like these two teams don't know each other well. And the coaches certainly know each other well as also. But the one time they did play this year, the Rams won by 19 points. wasn't much of a game. Neek Clifford had an 11-point, 11-rebound double-double for the Rams. Isaiah Stevens had a 9-point, 11-assist game. And this is a Rams team that was rolling that night. And when its offense is going, it has a very balanced attack led by one of the most respected and has a ton of records, fifth-year point guard, one of the best point guards in Mountain West history in its 25 years, and Isaiah Stevens, who wants to go out. So he doesn't want to go out on a Wednesday afternoon in the first round of the Mountain West tournament. So I expect the Rams to come out playing pretty well. It is a good matchup, I think, against San Jose State. It's not just the Isaiah Stevens show. Patrick Hardy is very good. Joel Scott, Neek Clifford. They have a balanced attack, and when they're rolling, their offense is very balanced. KenPom.com sees this as a 15-point Colorado State Rams win, and the Rams need it. They better win. Right now, they are in every bracket projection. They are kind of that next four in. They're one of the five or six teams that are in. But I'll tell you what, you lose to San Jose State, it's not just like you didn't do anything to improve your NCAA tournament resume, but you lose on Wednesday, that's a bad loss that you're picking up right before the tournament. So not a good look if they stumble on Wednesday. I don't think they will, but if they do, it's because San Jose State has some pretty good guards themselves. Myron Amy, very dynamic guard. He can attack the rim, and he's hard to guard. He can go find his own shot at any time. End of the shot clock, that kind of stuff. And, of course, I think Alvaro Cardenas is one of the most steady point guards because he's on a team with a bad record, and you know, that's how it goes in these things. I don't think a lot of people know about him, but he's a really good point guard. I do think they have two good guards at San Jose State that if those two guys are playing really well, Alvaro will control the game and the tempo and kind of, I don't want to say hold his own or do better than Isaiah Stevens, but he's not gonna be the weakness for the Spartans, that's for sure. And Myron Amy, when he gets going, he can really get going. So San Jose State has a shot. I don't think it's gonna be just an entire blowout. I don't think they're just gonna fold. But the Rams should win this game when their offense is clicking. They're balanced. All that said, for those who haven't been paying attention, during league play, Colorado State was number three in defense, and it is their defense, I think, that's maybe most impressive lately. And in league play, they were number one against two-point field goal percentage. I was looking at KenPom about this game earlier, and let me pull it up again. The interesting thing, again, I think people think of the Rams and they think of that offense. I've said it multiple times here already that they're spread it out and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, they were number in conference play, number three in defensive efficiency, and number one, they're allowing teams only to shoot 46.5% on two-point baskets. So their defense is good. And on the other side, I think San Jose State, you know, if they could get some... If their defense can slow down Isaiah Stevens, they have a chance. But the spreading it out and hitting these open shots that the Rams sometimes can do when they get rolling, it's tough because San Jose State's defense, not only were they dead last in conference play, let's see, against a three-point shot, they allowed 39.1% three-point shooting this year, which ranks 361st out of 362 Division I teams. So they're second worst in the entire country at three-point shooting. That was overall this season. When you get into conference play only, the percentage is even worse. They allowed teams to shoot 42.4% on three-pointers this year. So they're not defending that arc very well. And if Colorado State gets rolling from the outside, the game probably could get out of hand. So obviously that's not what Tim Miles and San Jose State wants, and we'll see how it goes. The winner of that game on Thursday advances to the quarterfinals to play the two-seed Nevada, who I think probably playing as good, not probably, you'll hear my overall projections here in just a couple minutes, and I think Nevada's the best team in the league right now, playing the best right now, and they're 2-0 against San Jose State in the regular season. They won by 30, and they won by 21, and they're also 2-0 against the Rams. They won by 13 in Reno, and then just 2 weeks ago, on February 17th, the same night Darius Brown had that banked-in three-pointer to force overtime against Fresno, like, as those two things were happening at the same time, as he was hitting that shot and forcing overtime, Jared Lucas was hitting a half-court three-pointer in Fort Collins and Moby Arena to beat Colorado State, and Nevada won that game by 3 points. So it was a close one in Fort Collins, at least, but Colorado State, you know, they haven't won outside of Moby other than Fresno State and Air Force, two of the three bottom teams in this league. They haven't went outside of Fort Collins since December, so they need this one. They can't pick up another bad loss. I do think the Rams will probably take care of this one and advance to Thursday to play the number 2 seed Nevada Wolfpack. Okay, well, let's move on to the final matchup of Wednesday's opening round of the Mountain West Tournament, the number 6 seed UNM Lobos, number 11 Air Force Falcons. A lot of you who are listening to this are obviously Lobo followers, maybe Lobo fans, and any of you who are 45 minutes into this podcast and were really just here to hear what I thought about the first round matchup between the Lobos and the Air Force Falcons, thank you for sticking around. If you didn't want to listen to all that other talking grammar, You're not hearing this, but here comes. Here's my breakdown of the first round matchup for the Lobos, which is an Air Force team that, look, there's no reason to think that this game should be close. I think KenPom is predicting this game to be, the KenPom computers predict an 83-67 Lobos win, a comfortable victory for in a tournament setting on a neutral court. And, of course, we all know that just a couple weeks ago, on February 24th, Air Force beat the Lobos in the pit. It is the reason the Lobos are not in the NCAA tournament right now, more comfortably anyway, because they have that horrible loss. It's a quad four loss. Right now, as we speak, as I record this, the net rankings, UNLV is up high enough where when the Lobos lost to UNLV at home, it was, for much of the season, considered a quad three loss. But now it is a quad two loss. So the only blemish on UNM's resume right now in terms of bad losses, which are usually considered quad three is a bad loss, quad four is a really bad loss. They have zero quad three losses. They have one quad four loss, and it's Air Force. So you can get into the NCAA tournament with quad four losses. A lot of teams have. In fact, right now, Florida Atlantic, last year's Final Four team, kind of the Final Four darling, if not for San Diego State beating them. Both of them were the darlings that got to the Final Four last year. But Florida Atlantic right now is projected to be comfortably in the field of 68 and in the NCAA tournament. They have two quad four losses. So it can happen. One quad four loss does not an NCAA tournament resume kill. So the Lobos, though, can't do what they did, obviously, against Air Force just 2 weeks ago in the pit. Air Force is ranked, 259 in KenPom right now. They have a 9-21 record. They only went 2-16 in league play. But the head scratcher about Air Force right now is, for the first time, I think since 2003 or 2005, maybe, first time in a long time, they did not win a home game in league play this year. They did not win once in Clune Arena. But they do have the last place team in the Mountain West does have two quad one victories on the road. Not only did they beat UNM in the pit, one of the toughest places to win in this league, they beat UNLV in the Thomas and Mack Center, where the conference tournament is, and they beat them by 32. They're averaging 32 points a win in the Thomas and Mack Center this year. No other team's doing that. So Air Force obviously can get rolling at times. They did against the Lobos for stretches. They did against UNLV the entire game. The reason when they get rolling, they're a young team for Air Force. Air Force standards, but they do have some really good players, for Air Force, and I would tell you that right now, you know, when they beat the Lobos in the pit, they had five players in double figures, and they can get that balance. They're not a very deep team, but what they do have is some good starters. Ethan Taylor's good, I think, but really forward, Rytus Petritus is he's an all-conference level guy, and scored 15 against the Lobos, hit the dagger three late in the game. JT Toppin missed an assignment, and Rytus nails this open three-pointer. And Bo Becker also, he had two highlight reel dunks against the Lobos on some back screen cuts that the Lobos just almost forgot what they were doing against an Air Force team that's been doing those Princeton-style cuts for years. So it was a game the Lobos really, really performed poorly in, and Rytus Petraitis and Bo Becker made him pay. Bo Becker had 19 in that game in the pit. But let's also not forget that in that game, Air Force only shot 5 of 7 from the free throw line. They don't get to the line much. They're not aggressive to the point where you foul them, so they're not going to get to the free throw line a lot. They really only play 5 or 6 deep on a regular basis, and the Lobos run a lot. The Lobos did beat them handily earlier in the season. The Lobos are better than them in every computer metric by leaps and bounds. And UNM in the same game that the Air Force only shot 5 of 7 at the free throw line, well, UNM didn't exactly take great advantage of that because they were only 8 of 27 at the free throw line. They shot 20 more free throws, but they missed 9 of them. And you lose a game by a point and miss 9 free throws, that's an awful lot to do with it. So worse than that, Air Force got rolling from the outside. They hit 11 three-pointers, and 8 of them were in the second half. They hit 8 second-half three-pointers. UNM that game, when they lost in the pit, 3 of 16 overall. So Air Force outscored UNM at the three-point line 33-9. And you're not going to beat a whole lot of teams when you lose the three-point shooting battle 33-9. And UNM is never going to, I shouldn't say never, this year they're not a great three-point shooting team. They don't take a whole lot of them, and they don't make a whole lot of them. But they got to be better than getting outscored 33-9 against an Air Force team that the Lobos should beat Wednesday. And there's a reason that UNM is still trying to play for an NCAA tournament, and Air Force is the last seed in this conference tournament. So, capable Air Force Falcons team, but the Lobos should handle their business. Projected to do so by 16, is that what? Yeah, 83-67 is what the KenPom.com computers project. I don't know if it'll be that much, but I do think the Lobos should comfortably win, as they did earlier this year in Clune Arena. We'll have to see what Jamal Mashburn Jr.'s health is like. He got the flu on Saturday, the day of the Utah State game. If he's back, good. He's had some pretty solid games against Air Force through the years. I want to say too that two guys, they alternated, but the Lobo bigs had good games against Air Force too. In the loss in the pit, Nelly Jr. Joseph, who quietly has been maybe one of the best centers, maybe the best center in the entire conference lately. There's not a whole lot of true centers, a lot of really good power forwards, but not a whole lot of true centers, so take that into consideration. But Nelly might be the best center in the league right now, and he is a guy that in the loss had 17 points, 9 rebounds, 3 block shots, and I think he has 4 double-doubles in his last 6 games. JT Toppin didn't have a good game in the pit against Air Force, but the first time they played him, he had 25 points and 13 rebounds. So the Lobos' two big men each had a good game against Air Force this year, and that's not to take, you know, not to totally forget the fact that Donovan Dent might be taking over, not just for the House and Mashburn show at UNM. He might be taking the reins as the best guard in the league from Isaiah Stevens when Colorado State's Isaiah Stevens graduates at the end of the season. I know DJ Thomas at UNLV, the freshman, a lot of people are really high on him, and they should be. But Donovan Dent, let's not forget, and I don't think he wants people to forget, he feels he might be the best guard in the league right now, and certainly wants to sort of carry that torch that is left for him from the two senior departing guards on the Lobos that he plays with right now, and Isaiah Stevens. So I think he could have a good game. And one more little nugget on all this, Jalen House scored his career high at 42 points against Air Force. It was a couple years ago now, but same style of play. When Jalen House gets rolling against this offense, he's a problem, and he can be a problem for Air Force. And I do think that the matchup, despite the fact they just lost in the pit to this Air Force team, I do think the matchup is just fine for the Lobos. We'll see. You know, if they lose this, they're not in the NCAA tournament. They don't deserve to be if they lose twice to Air Force. So we'll see. I think this should be fine. The winner of this game, the winner of the 4 p.m. I guess this game is what, Thursday? This game is Wednesday, 4 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Mountain. Again, streamed on the Mountain West Network, themw.com. And the 6-11 game, the winner plays Thursday in the quarterfinals against number 3 Boise State at 8:30 p.m. Pacific, 9:30 p.m. Mountain. That game will be on CBS Sports Network, and it's a late one. It's a late starting game, and Boise State has swept both Air Force and New Mexico this year and has been a thorn in the side of the Lobos, mainly because of their big physical play. And I think the one person, maybe the one matchup in the league that kind of highlights the weakness of the Lobos in starting three guards who are 6 foot tall, 6 foot two, and 6 foot two is Boise State, who starts Max Rice, Roddy Anderson. But at the three, you're starting a 6'7" Chibuzo Agbo, who's a really, really good small forward in this league. Just overpowers whoever's defending him. It's going to be one of those shorter guards, and he, if that's the matchup, you've got problems if you're the Lobos. And maybe that highlights it better than any other matchup in this league is what Boise State does to him. So I don't think Boise State is a team that the Lobos can't beat by any stretch of the imagination. They could have beat him in the pit. Max Rice had a career game, 35 points, and was putting shots in like crazy, off balance shots. They held Tyson Dagenhart, statistically speaking, to a pretty mediocre game in the pit. I do think in Boise, Tyson was a lot better, and he's been kind of on fire, frankly, for the past 10 games or so. Really, since that game, throughout the month of February and in March, Tyson Dagenhart elevated himself, in case there was any question. There shouldn't have been, but in case there was, elevated himself back up to a clear-cut first-team all-conference performer. And the guy I haven't mentioned yet for Boise State is Omar Stanley, the St. John's transfer, who is a phenomenal defender, phenomenal pickup, phenomenal newcomer. He's a really good piece too for Boise State. So if by chance the Lobos beat Air Force on Wednesday, they face Boise State in that quarterfinal round. And now I'm just going to give an overview of the conference tournament as a whole. I gave you the three first day matchups. I find it interesting that in this Mountain West season, that might be the best season ever for the Mountain West, that the conference tournament that everybody's looking forward to has three potential. I'm just playing chalk here. It doesn't matter if you play chalk or not. It doesn't matter who wins the three first round games. It doesn't have to be the favorite. Three quarterfinal matchups are actually regular season sweeps. Utah State was 2-0 against Wyoming, swept Fresno State as well. If you skip down to the 2 seed, Nevada, they swept Colorado State and they swept San Jose State handily. Boise State swept New Mexico and swept Air Force handily. So three of these, like in this tournament where everybody says everybody's so equal and everybody's so close to each other and bunched up, three of them were regular season sweeps. I don't think the old saying is it's hard to beat a team three times in a row. Well, yeah, you play anybody enough times, it's hard to keep beating them forever. But I will say that I do think Utah State should beat their first-round opponent, whoever it ends up being their quarterfinal opponent, whoever it is, Wyoming or Fresno State. I think that one's comfortable. I don't think Nevada and I don't think Boise State are going to have an easy go of it, assuming, and in this case, I'm going to assume chalk wins and 7-seed Colorado State wins and 6-seed New Mexico wins. I don't think either one of those teams are going to get blown out by number 2 Nevada or number 3 Boise State just because the higher seed there, swept them in the regular season. I think those are going to be good games. Let me back up and backtrack a little bit to that 4-5 game, the UNLV-San Diego State game. UNLV is playing as just about as hot as anybody in this league other than Nevada, who just beat them on Saturday night, of course, and swept that in-state series. But UNLV, I'm pulling them up here right now, 19-11 overall, 72 in KenPom. The reason they're not in the NCAA discussion, although they're kind of on the outside sneaking up into the discussion a little bit, but they're not going to be in the NCAA tournament if they don't win this Mountain West tournament, is pretty much the consensus opinion. And the reason for that is they lost their season opener on their home court to Southern by 14 points. Southern's ranked 257 in KenPom. They also lost in a semi-home game, which means they were playing in Henderson, to Loyola Marymount, who is 190 in KenPom. They've also lost to Air Force, 259 in KenPom, by 32 on their home court. Those are all horrible losses for any computer metrics. That's why they've played themselves out of NCAA consideration, despite the fact that if you look at what they've done since, let's see, this is January 27th. Since that Air Force loss, that 32-point home loss to Air Force, UNLV has won 10 of its last 12 games. The only two times UNLV has lost since January 23rd, when they lost by 32 to Air Force, has been to Nevada, both in Reno and in Las Vegas, and Nevada's the best team in the league right now. So UNLV is playing pretty darn good, and that includes, in that span, that includes the win over New Mexico in the Pit. They also beat New Mexico in the Thomas and Mack Center earlier in the year, but they've beat San Diego State too. Just last week, last Tuesday, they beat San Diego State in the Thomas and Mack Center, and that was really a statement win. If their 9 out of 10 at that point wins weren't enough to convince you, maybe their 10th win out of 11 games when they beat San Diego State, finally, and they hadn't beat San Diego State much in the last 5, 6, 7 years, they beat them 62-58 at home in a game that, DJ Thomas, the great freshman that they have, point guard, hit a big shot late in the game to pretty much seal the deal, and he had 19 points in that game against a San Diego State team that can shut down guards. And Lamont Butler's a really good defensive guard. Keelan Boone, one of the two Boone brothers, had 16 points, 11 rebounds in that game, and 4 assists, also 4 blocks. I mean, UNLV has some pieces. So I do think this UNLV-San Diego State matchup is going to be a really, it's a toss-up. San Diego State should win. But UNLV is playing fantastic. San Diego State has the best player in the league. But UNLV has, you know, one of the two best freshmen and up-and-coming stars, but also has two big men, brothers, Caleb and Keelan Boone, who are just fantastic. Rob Whaley's playing fantastic, too. He's a little bulldozer forward that's waste. Well over 250, I think, and just as one of the strongest players in the league. I think UNLV has some pieces that can cause some problems for any team, but even one like San Diego State that likes to play physically. All that said, I do lean a little bit with San Diego State winning that game and setting up what I think is going to be a potential, a fun potential semifinal matchup between number 1 Utah State and number 5 San Diego State on Friday on CBS Sports Network. And the reason I'm kind of looking forward to this one and chuckling a little bit is Jaden Ledee's the Mountain West media pick for Player of the Year. Danny Sprinkle, Utah State's coach, basically said, "I'm not voting in this thing again if my guy doesn't win. If the best player on the best team or the most valuable player on the best team doesn't win Player of the Year." And I kind of think the coaches poll is going to have a Utah State player. And if it's not Darius Brown, it's going to be Greg Osabar, who is a great big man himself, who had a phenomenal game when they beat San Diego State in Logan. Now, Jaden Ledee and Greg Osabar are those two big men going at it on that Friday semifinal game in the Mountain West tournament, assuming that is the matchup. Man, that's going to be must watch TV for Mountain West fans and people all over the country. So I look forward to that. If that is the matchup, I'd probably lean towards the experience then of San Diego State to get back to the championship game. And I that's not that I don't think Utah State can beat them. I do. Utah State can absolutely win this whole thing. But I'm leaning there towards a San Diego State over Utah State win that gets San Diego State into the championship on the top half of the bracket. I will throw this out there. If Utah State gets to the championship, I would love to see them play Nevada, since Steve Alford made those comments reminding everybody that, yes, Utah State won the regular season title, but they didn't beat us in Lawler, as Alford said. So I would love to see those two play. I don't think it's going to happen. I think it's going to be San Diego State on the top half of the bracket. Bottom half of the bracket, let's go to that Nevada-Colorado State game. I think Jared Lucas and Keenan Blackshear are two great guards. I think Isaiah Stevens is a phenomenal guard, but two's more than one. I think those two guards for Nevada, with a little bit of help of Trey Coleman on the defensive side of things, maybe slowing down somebody in Colorado State. If it's not Isaiah Stevens, maybe it'll be Nick Clifford or somebody else. But I think that Nevada's gonna have too many scorers that even though Colorado State's defense has been so good, I just think Nevada is going to find a way to score. Remember, when Jared Lucas did beat, and Nevada did beat Colorado State in Moby just a couple weeks ago with that half-court shot at the end of regulation, let's not forget that Keenan Blackjer didn't even play that game, so Nevada was not at full strength. Nevada, I just got done talking about how good UNLV's been in the last 12 games. They've won 10 out of 12. Well, Nevada is now at 10 out of their last 11, and actually you could go the next step on them. They've won 11 out of their last 12 since January 20th loss in Laramie to Wyoming. When I say they've won 11 out of their last 13, their two losses are to New Mexico. So it's interesting that in the last dozen games for UNLV, they've only lost to one team, but they've lost to them twice. It's Nevada. In Nevada's case, out of their last 13 games, they've won 11. The only team they've lost to twice is New Mexico. So Nevada's beaten everybody else. UNLV's beaten everybody else. It's going to be a really interesting game. Obviously, Noodles and Steve Alford know this tournament well, and they really love these tournament settings. And I just think Nevada's going to be too much for Colorado State. And Nevada advances to the semifinals is my prediction. Let's go down to that 3-seed Boise State and New Mexico matchup. Boise State's not a great matchup for the Lobos. That said, I think the Lobos need this game so much more. I do think it's going to be hard to just keep beating them. While the Lobos did get an overtime game over Boise State last year in the Pit, Boise State's had their number for the most part. And it's because they're a better rebounding team. They're more physical. They're bigger. And they know how to use that to combat what the Lobos do well, which is quick, small guards that kind of attack you and do the things. Boise State does the things that combat all that really well. I think the Lobos need it more, and I think Donovan Dent is a guy that, if you get him in the pick and roll, is going to give Boise State some problems. And I think there will be some urgency to, if that's working, to keep going to it until Boise State stops it. I also think that if Boise State, and they don't think this, but if anybody thinks Jalen House is going to shoot 2 for 12 again, like he did at Boise State a couple weeks ago in the loss, that's just not going to happen. Jalen House is in a shooting slump right now, but he's a fifth-year senior who hasn't shot, like this slump he's in, hasn't done that before. I don't think he just forgot how to shoot the basketball. So the odds of Jalen House not coming out of that slump are pretty slim. Lobos sure hope it's in one of the next few games for them, and the Boise State game would be a great one to do it in. So I do think the big men at UNM can do enough to sort of combat the Omar Stanley, Cam Martin, Tyson Dagenhart front court. I say Lobo big men, meaning three of them now. JT Toppin, sensational freshman, Nelly Jr. Joseph, who I already told you I think has been playing great, and of course Mustafa Amzeel, co-sixth man of the year, has been playing great off the bench. I think those three big men can kind of combat Boise State's four forwards, really, in Cam Martin, Omar Stanley, Tyson Dagenhart, and Chibuzo Agbo. So it'll be a great matchup. Man, if that Boise State-New Mexico matchup is what happens Thursday night, it'll be late, but it'll be maybe the best game of the day, I think, in the Mountain West tournament, in a day of games that could all be great. If I'm leaning towards New Mexico gets that win and they have a rematch with Nevada in the semifinals, Lobo fans aren't going to like hearing this, but I'm so high on how good Nevada's playing now that I think that Alford and Noodles would probably get the Lobos in the semifinals on Friday. So that makes me think then I'm leaning towards Nevada, a Nevada-San Diego State championship game on Saturday afternoon, and Nevada winning it. So there you go. There are my picks for the upcoming Mountain West tournament. Hope you enjoyed this long podcast. Covered a lot of ground. A lot of talking grammar on this episode of Talking Grammar, episode 83. Hope you liked it. Hope you enjoy it. Hope you enjoy our coverage that we're going to be doing all week. Not just Lobo basketball. Remember, it's sports, high school sports, like crazy this week with the high school state tournament. James Yotis and crew do a phenomenal job with that. And Ken Sickinger covering women's basketball has been doing phenomenal too with the Lobo women's team. Again, I want to thank TLC, Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, Electrical, for presenting this episode and for helping us out and bringing you these Talking Grammar podcasts. I want to thank you, the listener, the viewer, however you're watching this. And if you can, subscribe to the Albuquerque Journal, digital or print, abqjournal.com/subscribe. And we can't do this without you supporting local journalism. So hope you like this. Hope you enjoy future episodes. And it's going to be a fun week. And we'll see how long the Lobos keep playing. And not only this week, but beyond. And we'll see where they end up. So hope you like it. Let me know what you think at Jeff Grammer on X. And you could always email me at ggrammer@abqjournal.com. And for now, until next time, thanks for watching.